There's a sad sort of clanging from the clock in the hall and the bells in the steeple too. And up in the nursery an absurd little bird is popping out to say cuckoo.
Cuckoo, cuckoo.
Regretfully cuckoo, they tell us, but firmly cuckoo, they compel us to say goodbye
to you. So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, good night.
We hate to go and miss this pretty sight.
So long, farewell, auf Wiedersehen, adieu.
Adieu, adieu, to you and you and you.
So long, farewell, love, leaders, and goodbye.
We flit, we float, we flinky, flee, we fly.
So long.
What an appropriate way for big band, Broadway, and more to conclude. Farewell, but they'll be back again next Friday. Joe and big band, Broadway, and more. Thank you for that great show. It's 1 o'clock. This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. And now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. I'm the host, Jay Koronik, and my co-host in the studio right now is Dennis, and a reporter extraordinaire and WHFR promotions coordinator here at WHFR. We're very excited, aren't we, Dennis?
We're today? Excited because the air is on inside the studio, and yes, I did not expect
we're that. Inside, not outside, but other than that...
Sorry, yeah, I'm excited, yes.
We're expecting the imminent arrival of not one, but two candidates for the Democratic nomination for 15th District State Rep. That's the primary election, folks, coming up on Tuesday, August 3rd, just 2 weeks from Tuesday, 1 week from Tuesday.
Right.
1 week from Tuesday, about 11 days to go. And yes, you need to vote or absentee vote and make your choice within the Democratic Party or within the Republican Party side. Now, of course, there'll be more candidates running from other parties in November. You don't have to make a choice about those, but and maybe you shouldn't. There's always an ethical dilemma there.
Right.
There's always, and it's possible in Michigan, some crossover. And that means that a Democrat might choose to vote on the Republican side since there's, was it five?
Mm-hmm.
Four candidates, four or five. Yes, we're on top of this, folks.
Yeah,
on the Republican side for governor, and only two candidates for the Democratic side for governor. In terms of the 15th district rep on the Democratic side, there's four candidates. Definitely, we know that,
mm-hmm.
And only Suzanne Serini, who's going to be running as the Republican for the 15th district state rep seat, and so she's not involved in the primary, although her name may be on the ballot. But
it has to
how.
Be. Don't they work it that way? And then it's just
automatic. I
would think
they have all the Democrats and Republicans, even if they're the only name.
Exactly.
There.
And then what happens? Nobody fills that in. Well, no, I'm sure all she needs is one.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
That's funny.
Right. And of course, candidates need to vote for themselves because it might be close. You know,
that's true.
Yeah, a little story from my high school election and politicking days. I was running for senior class president, and it was a tight election. It was myself, sort of an academic nerdy type guy,
mm-hmm.
Against a really, really popular guy who was out for some sports. Uh-oh.
But you played soccer,
no,
right?
No, that was just intramural. I mean, that was just in the gym class, you know.
Right.
I was actually out for track, and I was really bad at it,
though. Oh, really?
I was one of the last ones around the track. I said I just went out for track for exercise, that's all.
So what did you? What was your platform?
Well, the story was, you know, what matters to you, and well it should.
Wow.
Yeah, it was real effective, and I gave out little little business cards I had made up with my name on. I would very much appreciate your support for your senior class
that
president.
That is really cool.
And but it was so close, I won by one vote.
Did you vote for yourself?
I did.
Okay.
Because I knew that was a basic rule of campaigning. However, I found out that the fellow running against me, who was a friend of mine,
He
voted for me. He thought I would vote for him.
Well, you know, that is the customary practice.
No, no, no. Not in politics. It's
in high school, I thought.
No.
That's interesting. So he lost because he voted for you. It would have been a tie.
Well, other people voted for me, too.
No. But that really was the swing vote.
Either way you want to see it. Either he lost because I voted for me, or he lost because he voted for me.
I prefer that you won because you were the better candidate.
The point is, well, thank you. But the point is, in politics, you can't make any assumption about even one vote counts, folks. So when August 3rd gets here, a week from next Tuesday, you need to go out and vote at your friendly polling place. So we're waiting for a guest.
Yeah, still waiting.
Okay. This is Amy, who has joined us from the hallways. And she is, Amy's our news director at WHFR. We're specifically waiting, and things happen, and there's a lot of parking problems here. George Duraney is scheduled to be here at this point in the first 15 minutes or so. And we do have another person scheduled to start at 12:45 for an interview. So if George can't make it here by then, well, maybe we can catch him next week if we're not filled with the other candidates. So I don't think your microphone's on, Amy. Talk to me.
Well, good afternoon.
There we go.
And actually, we're just going to put in another quick phone call and see if we can contact Mr. Duraney.
Okay, let us make that phone call.
Oh, fine.
No, I mean, you make it.
Okay.
And Dennis and I have some stories here to cover.
Yes.
Thanks
for coming in out of the hall, Amy.
No problem.
I had endorsement updates, okay, real quick, as long as you're talking about the election. And that is that, first of all, there's this hotly contested, in the primary election on August 3rd, for the District 3 Senate District on the Democratic side. Last week, I announced one or the other here, the Sierra Club is endorsing a William Isaac Robinson.
I'm looking at his picture right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Instead of Alma Wheeler Smith, who is the incumbent.
Right.
Kind of interesting there. But Robinson has this extensive background with green issues and Vice President of Young Democrats, a Teamster. He promoted the Blue-Green Alliance, as I mentioned last week. Well, I found, because I must have gotten it before, the American Federation of Teachers of Michigan, they are supporting, for that same district race, Mohammed Okdie, O-K-D-I-E. He's retired from the Detroit Federation of Teachers, so he's one of their own,
right,
you might say, and was a longtime AFT Michigan vice president, so a union person. He understands the needs and issues facing education in Michigan. So both of these groups are recommending for the District 3 State Senate, District 3, which is part of Dearborn. I think it's only the east side of Dearborn, but they're recommending people that are one of their own, you know, very close to their own issues. So maybe Alma, we don't know about her voting record for education, I mean, specifically right here, but it wasn't impressive enough for either the AFT Michigan or Sierra Club to recommend her. And usually they'd recommend an incumbent because their name recognition might get them reelected.
Absolutely.
So it's a political thing.
Sure.
Yeah. So it's kind of nice. I mean, it's true that the person who is best supporting green issues, who's a Democrat anyway, is a Sierra Club former member and green issues activist, William Isaac Robinson. And Mohammed Okdie, O-K-D-I-E, is being endorsed here by AFT Michigan. Also, just yesterday, Thursday, July 22nd, Rick Snyder, who is one of the Republicans, one of the four or five, wish I could remember, running for the Republican nomination for governor, Republican slot for the governor's position in November, has just been endorsed by former Governor William G. Milliken. And that is a big endorsement, I think, for those of us old enough to remember Governor Milliken, a wonderful guy. I saw him and met him last year at the Traverse City Film Festival, since he lives in Traverse City area with his wife, and he's looking good. And it's interesting; I haven't seen him, politicking or visible.
Well, he didn't lose. He decided not to run again.
That's right.
Okay. Yeah. There are definitely five. Remember that we watched the debate on television, and Schneider was noticeably not there. And he would have been the fifth. So, yes, there are, in fact, okay. five candidates.
All right. Yes. Okay. We'll work that out.
Okay.
So, Rick Snyder, endorsed by former Governor William G. Milliken. Again, he's Republican, the so-called nerd for governor, the former CEO of Gateway Computer back in the 90s, and an entrepreneur, successful tech-oriented entrepreneur here in Michigan with a couple of different businesses, and a former Dearborn resident, twice.
Twice, yeah. Well, and of course, a real big...
One time wasn't good enough for him. Come back again.
Gosh, I love that city, is what he said. the endorsement that the mayor of Detroit, he endorsed Dillon, Mayor Ben Dillon, and I thought that was interesting. And here, this is why. You're talking about the biggest city in the state, the mayor who's relatively new, but he had a substantial support in the election, and you would think that he would want to work closely with a governor to help the city get back on its feet. So mm-hmm. him endorsing somebody is really, to me, is very significant. So I don't know. What else we got going on here?
Well, I also want to mention, I guess, is that, as you might suspect, the AFT Michigan, a union, a labor union, is part of the AFL-CIO, but represents teachers and college teachers, like those here at Henry Ford Community College, and the Sierra Club, are also endorsing Virge Bonnero. Mm-hmm. They heard him.
Here.
I'm sure on the Journal.
Speak here on the Journal, and he got the Journal bump then. And
Michelle Martinez, yeah.
Just to be clear, the Journal bump, it doesn't mean we're endorsing them. It just means because he was here, well, it had to help him,
just
right?
Just the exposure.
Oh, yeah,
exposure itself creates that.
We're going to play a Dearborn homecoming spot, and we have a phone call coming in. We think it's our guest.
There it is.
What do you love about the Dearborn homecoming?
I love seeing all the classic cars.
My kids and I just love all the wacky contests and the carnival rides and all the fun stuff.
I come to check out all the great music acts.
Wow, I really enjoy coming here looking at all the art from all the great vendors.
Oh, the food is so great here!
Come join 89.3 WHFR.FM and all the fun of Dearborn Homecoming 2010 on August 6th through the 8th, where we will be broadcasting live and making waves from Ford Field. There is something for everyone.
We love Dearborn Homecoming!
And we're back live. Just wanted to mention about Dearborn Homecoming. WHFR will be there all 3 days, 2 weeks from today, oh boy, from 10 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night at our WHFR tent right opposite the carousel, we expect again. And still, we missed that phone call, so we hope that the person will call back here because we think it's one of our guests. Okay, here it goes. So, excuse me, folks. Dennis, Amy, talk among yourselves.
Okay, where is Amy? Oh, there you are, back in from the hallway. You know,
right.
We were talking before, while we were waiting for the phone call. That is him, it seems. We were talking about the different people up for governor. I have a feeling that this conversation is going to be interrupted, yeah. So I'll tread water here a little bit.
No, they wouldn't do that, I'm sure.
Do you think I can have his water?
We
give
not.
Our guests water, and I'm pretty thirsty.
Got your eye on it.
I have.
All right.
That could be the first question.
All right.
So we have our first guest on the line right now, George DeRaney, Dearborn City Councilman. George, are you there? Okay, wait a minute. Now, are you there?
I'm here.
Thank you. Wonderful. Yes. In the studio with me is Amy, our news director, and also Dennis, our promotions person. So they may throw out a question or two. We're trying to keep it organized, folks, here in the studio.
Okay.
We have offered to you and the other three Democratic candidates for the 15th District rep position on the November ballot 15 minutes of time, and we're going to ask basically the same questions. And
okay.
We do have about 12 questions, my goodness, so we may have to go a little quickly here, but I'm counting the time down now, so we'll try to be finished somewhere around 15. But don't worry, there won't be a big clock or a ticking sound
okay,
or a beep or anything.
Okay,
well, many of our listeners probably already are aware that you're one of our current councilmen here in the city of Dearborn, and you've decided to run now for the 15th District, Michigan's rep position from this area that Gino Polidori is term limited out of. But for those that are not familiar with you or your background, briefly tell us your background, education, job experience, family, any other accomplishments. Again, just a minute or two of that, if you can. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I've lived in the city of Dearborn. I've been a Dearborn resident for 51 years. My parents moved here, actually, in 1959. I'm a graduate of Edsel Ford High School, and also right next door to you there at U of M Dearborn. I received a degree in economics from U of M Dearborn. And from there, actually, I owned the classic trolley company for 20 years, a little red trolley car that people saw running around town, and really enjoyed doing that and started that business up about 22, 23 years ago. But when I was when I got on the council in January of 2007, I gave up the trolley business so I could spend time doing my work on the council. So I've been a council member for 3.5 years, and I'm also a realtor. I've been a realtor for REMAX Team 2000 since 1994. So I've been a realtor and a broker for REMAX. So that's my my background. I've been pretty much a community activist for like the last 20, 25 years. I've been Rotarian of the Year. That was in 2009. Also in 2009, I was the Dearborn Good Fellows president. I've been active with Michigan Cancer Foundation on their board for 15 years. I was on the board of directors for the Chamber of Commerce for 6 years. And I also received a community service award from U of M Dearborn for my community service.
That's great. Why have you chosen to run at this time for this position? That is the 15th District Michigan Rep position.
Well, number one, it's an open seat. As you said, Gino Polidori is term limited. So it's been the tradition here in Dearborn that when we elect the state rep, that state rep stays on for 6 years. That was true of Gino, was true of the rep before him, Gary Warnchak, and was true of the rep before Gary, which was Agnes Dombrowski. So it's, you know, even though it's a two-year term, the tradition here is that that person would be there for 6 years. And at this stage, I think that my background and my experience shows that I have helped Dearborn on the council, and I just want to take that background and experience to Lansing to help Dearborn even more.
Okay. Dennis?
Hi, why have you chosen to run as a Democrat?
Well, because those are my beliefs. I mean, I've followed the Democratic Party basically my whole life. And all the presidents growing up, you know, I guess you start off as when you were a kid. And when I was a kid, John F. Kennedy was president, and you know, I was just really enamored by him as a youth. And then all the way along the way, I've been really satisfied with the Democratic Party and the Democratic leadership. So that's who I am.
Okay.
Mr. Duraney, this is Amy Powers. Tell me a bit about what your understanding of the sort of skills and abilities that somebody running for the 15th District would need.
Well, you know, I think one of the most important abilities or qualifications is being able to step in day one and do the job. One of the problems, I believe, with term limits is lots of times we get people that are not qualified. And it takes time to learn the job, and by the time you learn it, you're term limited and you have to go. And maybe that's why Michigan is in the state of confusion that it is because there's not enough people in Lansing that have a good background. I believe my background, I passed a $250 million budget 4 years in a row now, worked on it and passed it for the city of Dearborn. So I believe that kind of experience is essential to have in Lansing. And again, I think I have a firm grasp of what the residents' concerns are because I've been so involved with a lot of different organizations and clubs. And so I think that's important.
And what do you see as the primary focus? What would be your emphasis?
Well, the focus, I think, is on job creation. I think, you know, the statistic that I read not too long ago said that half of the job loss in the private sector since the year 2000 in the United States, half the job losses have come from the state of Michigan. So to me, that's just unacceptable. We have to do a much better job of keeping our jobs here in Michigan and making it easier for the small business person. I have that small business background, too, but making it easier for a small business person to expand and to maintain their business.
Okay, we're going to go into some sort of position statements, but I know that these are all very complicated issues. Obviously, jobs, because Michigan, I just heard recently that Michigan, though, is not the number one state for unemployment right now. It's number two.
How did that happen?
I don't know. It's wonderful, I guess, but it's really bad for whoever became number one.
Yeah.
But still, our unemployment is probably around 13%, I'm guessing. And what do you think the state can do, maybe just an idea or two that you could support to help get people back to work or help the unemployed?
Yeah, well, getting back people back to work, I think, again, we have to make this a friendly environment for businesses that want to move here. You know, with our Michigan business tax the way it is, I would support legislation to reform the Michigan business tax because, you know, they're taxing the profits that those businesses are making and at such a high rate, up to 22%, that businesses are just saying, you know what, let's move to Ohio, let's move to the South, let's move anywhere but Michigan. And, again, we have to do a much better job of keeping jobs here by making it easier for businesses to maintain their business.
We've interviewed several candidates for different positions, including Virge Bonaro and Rick Snyder here on this show, and it seems everybody is against the current Michigan business tax. Now, probably Democrat and Republican improvements or changes would differ. But if I just wonder, if everybody's against it at this point, how did it ever happen 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the last time they were in a crisis, they got rid of the previous onerous Michigan business tax, and they created this thing. But everybody's against it now. So, I mean, like maybe they didn't go far enough.
I think they just created something saying, let's try this because we know Plan A wasn't working. Let's try Plan B. But Plan B wasn't any better than Plan A, unfortunately.
Okay. Education. Pretty essential. A lot of our students are not getting to college. I mean, especially in Detroit, even college graduation numbers are down across the country as well as in Michigan. And I know Governor Granholm has had several committees investigating this, and everybody wants more people to get more education because they're probably making more employable. Hopefully they'll stay in Michigan too. So any quick fixes on the education dilemma, especially higher ed?
I know that there's been some tax advantages to the big three, and those were important to give the big three at 2 or 3 years ago. Some of those tax incentives for those larger companies took money away from the schools in the school funding, and it was maybe a good idea, one-time fix for the auto companies to have that tax break. But it really cost the schools, in not only K-12 but K-16. I think that loophole or that tax incentive has to be given back to the schools, and that, you know, we need to fund the schools more efficiently, and that's one of the things that I would propose to bring more money to the school systems.
Okay. Well, the tax system has to be looked at pretty seriously, no doubt. All of the candidates say they want to do things that are changing, whether it's personal income or business tax credit. I think I asked you this maybe a month or so ago at the Dearborn Farmers Market, but it's a proposal from a group called the Michigan Fair Tax People. There is, of course, a national proposal for the fair tax implementation. Apparently, it cannot be done without changing the Constitution. What's your feeling about that? That would change both the way that people pay their personal taxes. In fact, it would do away with income tax in Michigan, raising consumption tax, but also businesses would have a real advantage in that situation. Supposedly, it's revenue neutral, though, as you may know. And so we're not really endorsing it here, but I'm just saying it seems like something like 20 years of research from Harvard and other institutions on the consequences of it that both sides could get behind. It's going to take a major change in the Constitution in Michigan in order to change the taxation items that we have in place now. So what do you think about that as a tax idea?
Yeah, I love it as a tax idea. I mean, with that much research behind it, I love the premise of it to begin with. But I'm for a constitutional to look into constitutional convention into it. Some people are not because of the cost. We're looking at maybe $42 million to do something like that. But I think the advantages outweigh the cost, and it's been a long time since we've looked at it. And, you know, times have changed, obviously, but it looks like Michigan has not changed. And so I think it's very important that we look at our Constitution.
Right. If you talk about systemic change, maybe one or two areas need it. It's always a problem. You never know what you're going to get from a constitutional convention, and many issues may be lumped together, and then the voters can only say yay or nay after it comes back to them. But it's worth a try, even for 42 million, I think. That's, again, the opinions expressed in the show, folks, are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. We are talking, and just have about another 4 or 5 minutes left in our allotted 15-minute slot with George Duraney, a current Dearborn City Councilman, who is running for the Democratic slot on the November ballot as the 15th District, new 15th District Rep. So a couple of just a couple more questions here to finish up, and we'll give you a minute or so to sum up your candidacy at this point, too. Let's see. So I'm going to jump to, well, are you taking, so you've already answered the question here about the position on the Michigan Constitutional Convention coming up in November. Yep. Are you taking any position on supporting either Bonero or Dillon, the Democrats, for governor?
I'm starting to form my opinion on this because I've been starting to get the question asked quite a bit now. I'm leaning toward Dillon.
Okay. All right.
I think Dillon would be the type of person that would be more able to work the other side of the aisle.
I think
that's very, very important.
Well, he certainly has at least 8 years that I know of experience as a majority leader, so he should know how the legislature works.
Yep.
Of course, he's term limited too, so he can't stay there anymore. A new governor, whoever it is, we'll have to find a new majority leader, so
that's right.
It's going to be tough. Well, just two questions left. One is to summarize in 1 minute why you should be chosen by voters for this position on the ballot in November. And we also want to make sure that we get your any sort of website or phone number, contact information for people if they're interested in helping your campaign or finding out more, too. Maybe you want to give that to me, to us, our listeners, now.
Okay, yeah. I do have a website. It's VoteDuraney.com.
Okay.
And very easy. And from there, you can send me questions. You could send me emails. You can sign up for a lawn sign or contribute. There's a lot of things that you can do. There's some positions that I take on certain issues on there also. So a lot of good information at VoteDuraney.com.
All right. And now please sum up for our listeners, even though well, they might have tuned in late. Who knows? That's the way radio is. People come and go. Why they should vote for you over your other three Democratic rivals.
Okay. I believe it. You should vote for me based on my background and my experience and what I have done for the city already. I've worked on and balanced a $250 million budget for 4 years on the Dearborn City Council. I was a small business owner for 20 years with Classic Trolley Company, so I understand the struggles of the small business person. I work in the community every day as a realtor, so I know how the economy affects people's home values, their taxes, and their lives, because I'm very aware of what's going on in the real estate world. I've gone to Lansing to fight with parents for school funding. I believe I have that background and the commitment to fight for Dearborn in Lansing.
Well, thanks so much. City Councilman here in Dearborn, George Duraney, thank you for your time today and the new WHFR Journal. Let our listeners know where you stand on the issues. Again, folks, his website is Vote Duraney. And, George, I trust I can spell your last name correctly, Daraney.
That's right.
.com. So thanks very much and good luck to getting your message out.
Thank you very much. Thanks
we'll see you around. Bye-bye. So now we have our second guest who is live in the studio with us, and we're going to listen to a two-minute commentary from Jim Hightower about fighting the super bugs of agriculture. Boy, that's a lot of big words. So listen up to Jim Hightower, our favorite progressive commentator, and then we'll start the interview with our second candidate for the same office that we're interviewing here today, Steve Dabkowski. So stay tuned and listen up to Jim Hightower.
Not so long ago, the miracle cure of antibiotics prompted doctors to prescribe them for illnesses as minor as colds and upset tummies. But then, people began to die in droves. Why? Overuse of antibiotics led to the rapid evolution of savvy bacteria resistant to the miracle drugs. These superbugs cannot be killed, so they swarm inside infected patients and kill them. It's become an epidemic. About 100,000 people a year are killed by unstoppable bacterial infections that they get in hospitals. Plus, many others die from superbug infections they get elsewhere. To add absurdity to this horror, the real culprits in the overuse of antibiotics are not our doctors, but giant meat processors. In the massive factory operations of such conglomerates as Tyson Foods, millions of chickens, hogs, and cattle are routinely dosed each year with antibiotics. The Union of Concerned Scientists estimates that 84% of all antibiotics go not to us humans, but to the animals in these industrial facilities. Why? One, because the facilities are filthy, making the animals sick. But second, and worse, the agribusiness profiteers use antibiotics simply to force the chickens, hogs, and cows to grow faster, thus reducing corporate costs. Never mind the cost in human health. This is so senseless that it makes your brain scream. At last, however, federal regulators are taking tentative steps to, oh, progress, stop meat processors from using antibiotics to bulk up animals. Of course, the corporate powers are swarming Congress like bacteria, in an all-out effort to kill any reform. This is Jim Hightower saying, momentum is on our side, however, and common sense might prevail. To help, contact the Union of Concerned Scientists at ucsusa.org.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled, Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
We're back with the second half of the new WHFR Journal, and we do have a second candidate for the Democratic position of 15th District Michigan Rep that will be on the ballot in November against Suzanne Sereny, who is the only Republican for that office. There may, of course, also be some so-called minor party candidates from Green Party, Libertarians, or whatever on the ballot also in November, just to be fair, so that people know that there are a lot of people to find out about and who you want to vote for. But at this point, the primary coming up is, especially for the Democrats, you have to choose among four candidates. And the second candidate today in the studios here with us live is Steve Dubkowski. So first of all, welcome, Steve. We're checking out your microphone.
I'm here.
Okay, he's here. Okay.
Was it still raining out when you came in?
It really started raining heavily now.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. Well, there's our weather report. Thank you.
Hey, we're always up to date.
I know. I like it.
Yeah, that's the nature of the show. It's always on top of the issues. So, Steve Dubkowski, first of all, tell us a little bit about your background. Some people may know, as I do, of course, that you were elected to the Dearborn City Charter Commission and right. served for a couple of months on that. And your educational background, your family, other accomplishments, education, of course, is, I think, essential since I'm an educator myself.
Right.
But inform our listeners about that briefly, a minute or two.
Well, I've grown up in Dearborn, and my grade school was St. Barbara's Grade School on the east side of Dearborn. I went to St. Mary's Orchard Lake High School for 4 years. And then attended and did the first 2 years of work here at Henry Ford Community College and then transferred to Michigan State University. Mm-hmm. And I graduated in 1964 with a bachelor's degree in primarily political science, but with emphasis in social sciences and economics. And for a few years I taught school in Detroit and subsequently went into business for myself as a business broker. Selling bars, restaurants, liquor stores. I was in the vending machine business, video games, pool tables, jukeboxes, and mm-hmm. had some commercial properties. And presently, I'm working as an independent printing broker. And okay. So I'm self-employed.
All right. Why have you chosen to run at this time for this particular elected position?
Well, I think Michigan is at a real serious crossroads for themselves. We've spent about 80 to 90 years emphasizing in our economy the auto industry, and we've done very well in this state. But all of a sudden, the auto industry and the truck industry isn't quite what it was in terms of jobs. And this election is about jobs, and it's about families surviving. And that's why I'm running for state representative. I have looked at this situation very seriously, and I've been politically active for 50 years in the Democratic Party. And I've come to the conclusion that the real problem we have here in Michigan is a problem we share with the rest of the country, and that is a financial problem. It's a banking crisis. It's not a traditional recession. For us here in Michigan, it's really a depression. And we have lost over the last several years about 800,000 good-paying jobs. And that is enormous if you compare California, which has over four times the population. They've lost a million jobs in the last several years. We've lost 800,000. It's almost four times the amount of California. And I don't believe many of these jobs in the auto industry are coming back. And the problem we have today in rebuilding Michigan's job base is that banks are not loaning money to the businesses. Mm-hmm. And I ran across an idea. Actually, I was listening to Virge Bonero, who's running for governor, speak early in February. And he was talking about the bank, State Bank in North Dakota, and that it's existed for 90 years and provides business loans in conjunction with local banks, local community banks, and has really helped the state of North Dakota. So I asked him, I said, what else do you know about it? He said, not really much. Why don't you get online? And the next day I was on the internet, and I've spent about 4 months researching the situation, and I've come to the conclusion that what Michigan needs to build jobs is a Michigan Development Bank of substantial size. And I concluded that since the four Michigan state pension funds that the state of Michigan supervises have assets of $58 billion. And they invest money all over the world, China, India, Europe, Toyota, Honda, believe it or not, that if $5 billion was allocated and invested as initial operating capital of a development bank, it would give us, under federal banking regulations, a loan capacity of $50 billion.
Wow.
That, and at no cost to the taxpayers.
Right. So in other words, we would set aside sort of $5 billion out of the $58 billion that we were already investing in a new banking situation, which would allow us to actually loan, again, about $50 billion, or up to that.
Up to that. And, and the problem, you talk to any businessman today, they'll tell you that the old banking relationships that they had are out the window. You go to a bank, you want to borrow $50,000, $100,000, $20,000. They don't want to loan it to you. And part of the problem is that the banks are under pressure by federal and state authorities to write down the value of collateral on existing loans. Somebody borrows $1 million, hypothetically. They put up collateral, well, to at least represent $1 million. Well, business properties, equipment has dropped in value. So the banks are saying, oh, the collateral you've given us is no longer worth $1 million. Give us more collateral. Well, if a business doesn't have any more collateral, they call the loan. Because if they don't call the loan and they have to write it down, the state or the feds will require them to. And if a bank has to write down too much collateral, they become insolvent under the law, and they are put out of business. There was a bank in Warren. It was called the Warren Bank. It's been around, I don't know, 30, 40 years. They were declared insolvent because they made a lot of investments in strip malls, office buildings, warehouses, and so on, and they had to foreclose on them and write them down, and they ran out of capital, and so they were wiped out. So banks today, it's almost impossible to borrow money from a bank. And as a business. And unless a bank has lines of credit that they can extend credit to their customers, you know, they have to wait 30 days, 60 days to get paid, they go out of business. And that's what I think really has to be done here in Michigan.
Well, it's great that you have this specific issue so well researched and if elected, I assume it's one of the first things you try to get the bills together and collaborate with others. And certainly if it was a governor who was in favor of setting up a state bank, my knowledge is not in depth, but it seems to me about 20-some states do have state banks. I'm not sure if they're
no, there's
set
only,
up the same
there's
way.
There's only one in North Dakota.
Only one? Okay.
Yeah. Oh. Now, state of Michigan here in the last couple of years allocated a couple hundred million dollars to be directly invested in business loans to small businesses and medium-sized businesses. But North Dakota is the only one that has an actual bank because by having an actual bank, you take the $5 billion, and that is used as a 10% reserve that is required under federal regulation. So banks essentially create money. They can multiply their reserves 10 times, and that's how they make loans.
Well,
I learned that back
idea.
At Michigan State years ago, and I don't come from a business background. My father worked at Ford's, and my mother was a secretary. So I didn't come from a business background, and I learned that many, many years ago.
Do you know if a state bank of this sort can be done without a constitutional change? Can it just be
I'm not aware of
legislated?
I'm not aware of anything in the state constitution that would forbid that.
Okay.
Obviously, it requires legislation. And even if it did have to, some changes would have to occur in the state constitution. I think the idea is so good,
yes,
and it doesn't cost anything, that I think we can get bipartisan support. In North Dakota, both the Democrats and the Republicans in the legislature love it. Okay. It has built North Dakota up in the last 90 years.
There are other issues, of course, and you've already answered the first several questions here about your background and your reasons for running and so on, but since in the time allotted, we can't go too much in depth. The problem of education, especially I think higher ed and job training skills, is a very important issue. Always important, and we're not doing the job as well as we should in Michigan with a very high number not completing high school, not completing college. Of course, that should change. Funding is, a lot of people say they need more money for that. Do you have any thoughts on the higher ed situation?
Not only higher education, but kindergarten through 12th grade, but the educational system, kindergarten through college and university and professional training, the basic problem is funding. There is insufficient funding. I propose that we have to deal with the reality that we're at, that we pass, the legislature pass, emergency temporary tax increases with a drop-dead date, meaning they're only for 2, 3, 4 years, 5 years, whatever it is.
Sort of a sunset law. Or whatever.
Sunset.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would be placed on the ballot for voters' approval because we have to recognize that what we're into in terms of economic problems are not going to be resolved in 6 months or perhaps even a year or two. These are long-term. And the problem that we have here in Michigan is that with the shortage of resources and given the situation that education, kindergarten through college, and corrections department make up about 70-75% of state expenditures, if there is a lack of money, education and corrections are going to be cut. That is frightening because what we're really doing is turning our back on the very young generation. And we're allowing convicted criminals to walk the streets without any jobs for them to work at. And that is a recipe for disaster in this state. So I think we have to have some serious discussions over temporary tax increases that are approved by the voters.
As long as you brought up taxes here, we always try to do segues, smooth transitions, so our listeners are not too confused about why things are coming up next. We are talking for the next 7 to 10 minutes here with Steve Dabkowski, who is the Democratic candidate for being the nominee towards November for the 15th District Michigan Representative to Lansing. Michigan business tax. Everybody we've interviewed on this show seems to be against the current Michigan business tax specifically. I assume, therefore, I'll never assume things like this, that you want to see changes in that too.
Well, I'm kind of an interesting person. I've been active for so many years, and two of my friends were in the legislature when the business tax, small business tax, was passed in the early 70s. That was State Senator Pat McCullough and State Senator David Plawecki.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them represented, at that point in time, Dearborn, because Dearborn was split between two state senate districts. And I actually was on the floor the night that was passed in the Senate. And I asked them, I said, what are you guys voting on right now? They saw a small business tax. I said, what is it? And they explained it to me. I says, well, do you realize that that is a sales tax on labor? They said, what do you mean? I said, the way I understand it is you're putting a tax on the wages that are paid to employees. And I said, how can you vote for that? And they said, well, the governor's for it. And that was Bill Milliken. And the big three are for it, meaning the auto companies, and the UAW. I said, I think they're all wrong. I think you have something that you're setting in motion here. You're taxing service industries. And as it turns out, over the last 30, 40 years, a lot of the growth in jobs is in the service industries. So you have white-collar employers, meaning, you know, they're running accounting firms, IT companies. They're being taxed. The small business tax is a tax on the amount of labor that they pay out.
Mm-hmm.
Every tax has a natural life cycle. Sometimes it works, and then sometimes it starts not working. I think what has happened here in the last few months, where there was a surcharge on the small business tax as an emergency measure, got the legislature and the governor through this budget year.
Right. There's a couple of years we've had this redo or changes.
Yeah,
in the Michigan business tax.
They're desperately hoping that the economy turns better, mm-hmm. and it hasn't. I think realistically you have to look at the small business tax, but you have to recognize that about 25% of the state revenue for the state of Michigan comes from that small business tax. And any major alteration of it is going to affect education, mm-hmm. and every other department.
I wanted to ask you, as we've been asking other candidates, and again, it's a little bit off the line, but it's out there, and we've had some people here who represent the Michigan Fair Tax proposal. Not sure if you're familiar with that, but if you are, what do you think about that as a way? My understanding is, if adopted, it would be set up to be revenue neutral. It eliminates the Michigan personal income tax, but also eliminates all Michigan business tax of the sort we have now, so that it's a consumption tax, although there's prebate checks that go back to individuals each month. So there's no withholding, but instead of a 6% sales tax for people and businesses, it goes up, I think, to just 9.75, 9.5, 9.75 on purchases. Supposedly, just that slight difference would really encourage business, because business would not have the Michigan business tax as it's written now to pay at all. And, of course, there is a fair tax proposal that's been introduced into the House in Washington, D.C. for years, about 10 years now, and that hasn't gone anywhere either. In Michigan, it would take a major change in the Constitution, I understand, to adopt such a thing. Any thoughts on that, or personal tax collection?
I'm not familiar with this proposal.
Okay. Right.
And
fair enough.
In Canada, they have something where, and in Europe, they
GST,
have
DST. Yes.
DST, and there's a lot of screaming and yelling about that. A lot of people.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. I need to tell the listeners that we know just enough about it here that the GST, which has been proposed by the Obama administration too, it's an extra surcharge on purchases across the U.S. even was proposed as a new funding mechanism, and many countries have done this, but there's all kinds of negatives about it. And it's interesting to me how Neil Bortz, B-O-O-R-T-Z, has written the most of the books about it and documented the research that is an evil thing. If it gets established, then you can't go backwards to the fair tax. So I just hope that we review these things very closely and try to find the appropriate method. It would attract a lot of business to Michigan if we eliminated that in that way, and yet it's only an extra 3% tax on sales.
The business community has been obsessed with the small business tax and the level of business mm-hmm. taxes
right.
for decades now. They're really fixated on it. And given the situation that we are in now in the United States and specifically in Michigan, I think they're missing. They're not catching what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
In not too distant a future, unless we have more credit available for businesses, they won't have to worry about paying taxes mm-hmm. because they'll be out of business. Now, I'm serious.
Yeah, sure,
Now, I worked for a printing company that once had a $750,000 line of credit. The company lost its line of credit, has no credit line. It's essentially gone out of business after 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
It got into this jam. The main press that was purchased about 8 years ago, about $1 million from Germany, that press was sold at auction for $1,400. That's what's happening to small businesses, and it's happening to supplier firms in the auto industry, and it's happening to manufacturing companies, and it's happening to businesses that are white-collar businesses. Their assets are being depressed. We're actually going through a deflationary period here, not an inflationary period.
Mm-hmm.
So I think realistically, I would like more information about this fair tax
concept. MIfairTax.org.
I'll get it from you.
Yeah, no problem. That's what we do here on the show. As many of our listeners know, we try to bring up alternative but somehow rationally based ideas that other people aren't thinking about. Not that we recommend them, but just so they can be in the mix of discussion. And there's a lot of ideas, especially from commercial media, that never get out there, or even candidates who don't already have name recognition or incumbency status that don't get a chance to express their views too. Just a couple of minutes here, and we have to sum up our interview with Steve Dabkowski, running for the Democratic, to be Democratic nominee in the election in November. But he's running in the primary, of course, against three other candidates. We asked earlier the candidate, and we just intend to, do you choose to take a position on supporting either Virge Bonaro, Democrat, or Andy Dillon, Democrat, for governor? Since I've been in the same election.
I think people should make up their own minds. I've already voted for someone.
Well, there you are.
Okay.
Okay, yeah, so we want people to vote.
And I'll tell you the truth.
Okay.
I hope that's what we're here for.
Right now?
I voted for Andy Dillon. And for Andy Dillon because I am a pro-life Democrat, and I have the endorsement of the Right to Life of Michigan Political mm-hmm. Action Committee.
Okay.
And I feel very strongly about that. And I finally said, you know, I like Virge Bonaro, but he on the issue of abortion and assisted suicide, I said, I got to vote for Andy Dillon. And I did on that
basis. I understand. And thank you for sharing that. But, of course, everybody has to make their own decisions.
That's right.
Whether it's one primary issue or a number of small issues, however it adds up. But do that research and find out where your candidates stand. So last, we have to summarize up here, two things. First of all, tell us how people can find out more information about your candidacy and your positions. I did copy down, and just from your website you forwarded us, there's a phone number and also an email for you. Is that what you'd like us to share in the future?
Yes, I have a website going up today, finally. It's called Jobs for Michigan, J-O-B-S, four, Michigan.org. And that will be up later this afternoon. I had some misfortune when an IT guy disappeared on me. And so I'm late getting one.
He disappeared into the virtual world.
He was in the process of having his home foreclosed, and I think he left Michigan.
Jobs for, the number four, Michigan, spelled out.
.org.
.org. O-R-G. Okay, yeah. We got that, and we'll pass that along. So could you sum up 60 seconds why people should choose you as the Democratic nominee for 15th District Rep in the primary election?
If you're looking for someone who is untypical, someone who's actually concerned about jobs and helping people survive the calamity that we're facing here in Michigan, I ask for your vote. I've been endorsed by the 14th District Democratic Party organization. I've been endorsed by, the Detroit Free Press, and Michigan Right to Life. And I will honestly tell you that I don't have all the answers, but I have an inquisitive mind. And I'm open to ideas, and I'm open to solutions to solve this this horrible unemployment and underemployment problem that we have here in Michigan, because without solving that, things will just get worse for us in education and all and the lack of community support from the Dearborn's loss, for example, of state revenue sharing is decimating our city programs. So we really got to get people back to work, because once people go back to work, they then begin paying taxes. And tax revenues go up, and we can deal with our problems. It's as simple as that. So I ask for your vote.
If it was only so simple once you get elected, it would be wonderful. But it's always a struggle with politics. And but thank you so much. Steve Dabkowski, here in the studio with us. He is one of those candidates in the Democratic primary on August 3rd, one of four. And so do the research, folks, and find out who you want to vote for, and make sure you do vote. We're going to listen to one more opinion from Jim Hightower. This one is about wimpy leaders. How appropriate an election moment. Wimpy leaders. So here is Jim Hightower, and we'll be back with our conclusion for the new WHFR Journal.
Right-wing Republicans and corporate Democrats have become a pathetic bunch of no-can-do Nancys. Faced with an economy reeling from the plutocratic policies that these same lawmakers pushed down upon us, they are now whimpering that America is too weak to meet the obvious needs of its own people. We must surrender to the gods of economic despair, they cry. At a time when history calls for our leaders to step forth with a bit of FDR boldness and rally grassroots people to rebuild our economy, they trumpet for retreat, giving up on America's historic ideal of the common good. A jobs program? Everyone for themselves, they shout. Health care for all? Go to the emergency room, they scream. Social Security? Socialism, they screech. Run away from it. Public education? Can't afford it, they tell us as they turn their backs on hundreds of thousands of teachers soon to be fired. Repair America's rotting infrastructure? Too big for us, they wail. Leave it to the next generation. Wagging tea bags rather than picking up the tools of real recovery, the woeful voices of American failure insist that they speak for the people. Hogwash. Americans are a strong, community-minded, democratic-spirited, can-do people. Indeed, the latest Gallup poll shows that 60% of the public favors, quote, additional government spending to create jobs and stimulate the economy. But we must balance the budget, whine the naysayers. Of course we should, and big majorities say we should do that by putting people to work, taxing the super rich to pay their fair share of Social Security and other public needs, as well as by slashing the $12 billion a month we're spending for wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is Jim Hightower saying, it's time for these so-called leaders to stop whining and catch up to the people.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
We're back with more of the new WHFR Journal. Just concluded our interview, our two interviews today during this hour with George DeRaney first and then Steve Dabkowski second, both candidates for the 15th District Michigan State Rep as Democrats. And I hope you learned some things you didn't know before.
Well, did you? I mean, I'm just wondering about some incident analysis.
Incident analysis. Well, it was interesting that Steve Dabkowski said today he's just been endorsed by the Detroit Free Press.
Yeah, and he brought in the copy. That was awesome. Yeah.
Also, a pro-life group, if that matters to people, endorsed him.
Mm-hmm.
He also states in his information that he's been a lifelong Roman Catholic, so that would fit. But some new ideas. The State Development Bank, I think we did hear that from Bonero or
Absolutely.
Snyder.
No, it was Bonero. Absolutely. Yeah, that, and well, you brought it up to Snyder, and he said that it was a great idea also.
Right, yeah. And I don't see a negative as long as they have some good bankers that manage it.
But doesn't that one of those things that seems like, well, why hasn't this been done? And like he said, it's only been done in one state. You kind of wonder.
It's kind of interesting that both Dabkowski and DeRaney, DeRaney says that he supports Dylan, and Dabkowski says, well, anyone you want to vote for, you've got to make the choice. But he voted for Dylan.
Right.
Locally, of course, Dylan is the local candidate, if you want to look at it that way. And Bonaro's from, oh my God, Lansing, 90 miles away.
Right, right.
But no, nonetheless, that was interesting.
Sure.
Durrani, of course, and not slighting him for Dubkowski, years of service in Dearborn, a community activist. But Steve's been around, too, in the background, talking to people. And so
well, he's worked for his party for a long time, too.
Yeah, well, I think Durrani said something about longtime Democratic membership. But I know Dubkowski has been very, very active also, or maybe in a slightly different way. So so we hope to present the other two candidates, just so you know, to be fair about this. And that would be Linda Tefalsky and Alex Shamey. As indicated on our WHFR.FM website, we have offered them time, 15 minutes each. And, of course, we only have next Friday before the election happens, a week from Tuesday. And so if they want to be here, folks, if any of you are supporters and would like Linda Tefalsky or Alex Shamey to have the time on the station for free to express their opinions, to answer similar questions. It's really the same list of questions, even though we have to jump around depending on how people answer the various questions. We'd be glad to do it. So you can just contact us here at the station. My name and address is probably out there more. My email is jkorinek@hfcc.edu. I check that every day. So, in fact, if you have any comments about the show, you can either send them to whfr@hfcc.edu or directly to me, jkorinek@hfcc.edu. So what would you say, Dennis? Well, thoughts?
Just the one thing that caught my attention, and it was already way past the point where we could go back and I could ask Mr. Durrani about it. But do you remember when he said he feels that many people get into office that are not prepared or not qualified, mm-hmm. and that it takes them a while to get the hang of it, and by then they're term limited?
Yeah.
I was wondering why he... I don't see that so many people are in office that aren't qualified. I guess that was the thing that really stuck out. Are we voters just not intelligent?
What happens is, and Gary Warrenchuk, and I know you respect him as a newspaper, former newspaper editor yourself.
Sure.
And Gary Warrenchuk was editor for many years of the Dearborn Press and Guide. He readily admitted after his three terms in Lansing that he was only getting the hang of it in the last 2 years, that he was led by the Democratic Party, whoever there was in charge at the time, told how to vote. I'm sorry, he was Republican at that time. The Republican Party told how to vote on things, and the lobbyists. And so he just jumped into supporting this bill or that bill. He didn't know how things worked, and because when you get up there, it is actually a very intense system, and you don't learn about all the details in high school or college usually. And so the problem is not that these people aren't intelligent, but they're not, you know, a career politician has real advantages once they get the hang of it, let's say.
I get that.
And
now,
even
yeah.
Warrenchuk, a very intelligent guy and an independent thinker, he admitted it took him at least 4 years to get the hang of it and to know his way around and to be able to be an independent. And so that's the problem.
That's very common then. Because I remember you more than once have said that this for new politics,